Welcome to Mastering Data, where we sit down with inspirational leaders in data and IT to hear their interesting career journeys and lessons learned. Each episode is packed with valuable insights and tips for those looking to excel in the world of data. So, whether you're just starting out or a seasoned professional, join us and get ready to take your data skills to the next level.
Welcome to the Mastering Data Podcast, the show where we explore the stories and experiences of extraordinary individuals making a significant impact in the data and analytics field. I'm your host, Erin Evans, founder and CEO of Intelligent Group. Today, we're honored to welcome Elisa Koch to the show. Elisa has been leading the charge as the head of data and analytics at the Australian Football League, widely known as the AFL, since October 2019. Her work is pivotal in revolutionizing how data and analytics shape the future of Australian football, from player performance and scouting to fan engagement and operational efficiencies. But Elisa's journey in the domain of data and analytics didn't start on the football field. Prevailing as a leader in her field, she spent time as the head of data and analytics and insights at Mayer, where she spearheaded a team enabling data-driven decisions in marketing, merchandising, and store operations through innovative storytelling and robust measurement practices. Before that, Elisa was at LinkedIn, working as the insights lead for marketing solutions in Australia and New Zealand. And further back in her impressive career, Elisa worked as a senior consultant at Quantium and also spent time at Avon and Citigroup. Elisa embodies the transformative power of data in diverse industries, and her multifaceted experience has had an undeniable impact on every organization she's been a part of. It is my absolute pleasure to have her here today. So without further ado, let's dive into what promises to be a really exciting conversation. Elisa, welcome to the Mastering Data Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
How was that for an intro?
Yeah, that was quite an intro. Wow.
You can steal that if you like.
Thank you.
So look, as we do on this podcast every single time, I really just want to start with you talking about your history, where you've come from, how you got to where you are now. And when did you fall in love with data?
My career has always been in and around data. And I think I knew pretty early on that this was going to be my calling. As you aptly read through my career history, it has spanned a lot of different industries. And really, I think that's where my passion for data comes, is how we can apply it in different situations, in different industries. A lot of what I've learned in each industry, I can kind of take that best practice and bring it on to the next industry and the next company I work for. So it really just has built upon each other. I mean, I guess in terms of how ultimately I landed at this role at the AFL, it probably really shouldn't have happened.
I love those stories. Let's hear it.
Yeah, never in my wildest dreams or, 20 years ago would I thought that I'd be working in Australia within a football sports league. Just so incredibly far-fetched for me. I did not grow up with sport. Honestly, not something I really did in my spare time or even watched in my spare time. But moving to Australia, especially living in Melbourne, it's almost like you can't escape it.
It's a religion.
It is a religion. So when a recruiter reached out about this role, I was definitely intrigued. Around the same principle of how I can apply data and analytics and learn from new and different industries. Mm-hmm. This is just that next iteration of that. So here I am.
That's fantastic. It's so cool to hear that story. And I think a lot of people probably looking at your profile would think, oh, she must be a massive sporting fan. She must be really into AFL. And you sort of look at your career, you jump from, sort of the early days and playing around with marketing and analytics. And then you got into Quantium and consulting, mm-hmm. and moved on to retail, and again that consumer and customer, and then you're in an AFL environment. Talk to me about some of those things that traversed the industries that you're in, and the things that you pulled from, let's say, your retail or your consumer focused analytics. Talk to me about how that's playing out now in sport.
Absolutely, it's such a great question. I mean, for probably the thing that I brought over to the AFL in my role from very early on was just a need to be focused on our fan and how that plays out in the world of data. Sport is an industry with a ton of data. I mean, most people looking outside in would say, oh, it's all about kind of the on-field data, the performance data, all of that. Yes, there's a lot of that data, but we also have a lot of data about our fans. I mean, you think about the typical sports fan, and unlike other industries, a sports fan or a sports customer is engaging in so many different ways, whether it's watching, it's streaming, it's listening, it's buying merchandise, it's going online and checking everything they need to know about their team. all of that data that encompasses a fan's engagement and their behavior, it's really important to capture that from a data perspective.
Yeah,
so really that has been the journey. And I feel like I've really taken that from the world of retail and customer. In those industries, really that focus on who is the customer, what are they buying, when are they buying, how are they buying, all those principles brought over to the world of sport.
And was that in play before you landed in the AFL? Was that something that they had sort of understood as that richness of data through the whole customer life cycle? Or did you come in and go, hi, I'm here now?
Yeah, that was the impetus to hire my role, which was to head up data and analytics, recognizing that the industry, meaning the AFL, the league, and all 18 teams, needed a centralized platform where all this customer data could come together in one place. Prior to me starting, I would say, generally speaking, they had a good understanding of their club members, you know, so okay. 18
independent club members.
Independent okay. club members and yeah. how they purchase club membership or don't purchase club membership. But beyond that, from an engagement perspective, that view is not there.
Yeah, wow.
So that has been the journey over the past 3 years, is how do we get that 360 view of the fan?
Amazing. And so there's 18 clubs that, of course, are sort of the periphery of, you know, what you're servicing. Talk to us about that relationship, because it is quite unique in that you are the central spoke, I suppose, the hub rather, on that spoke and hub model. How do you work with the clubs? How do you talk to them? Of course, they've all got their own data and analytics mm-hmm. strategies that, you know, are top secret independently
yes.
and driving competitive advantage. So how do you operate in that central focus? And what is your role in facilitating their ability to drive insightful?
Yeah. So catching up with actually a lot of different sports leagues around the world, the model that we have at the AFL is actually quite unique from what I've learned.
Yeah, wow.
It's a centralized shared service team that my team provide to all 18 teams.
Yeah, cool.
And it's an offering that we call Fan Data Service, or FDS.
Yeah, cool.
The teams essentially sign on or subscribe to this service, and we provide that end-to-end data and analytics support. So everything from warehousing all their data, reporting and visualization, and now offering a machine learning capability as well.
Amazing.
So it's really unique in that clubs entrust us with all their data and then to provide it back to them in a meaningful way.
Yeah, that's really cool.
People are normally surprised by that because they just assume, you know, aren't the 18 clubs incredibly competitive?
Yeah,
absolutely. On the field, they are incredibly competitive. But what I found is that in the admin side of the business, when they're talking about fans and how to grow their fans, it's actually quite a collaborative community among the 18 clubs. The thinking being, you know, if you are a Richmond supporter, you're not going to wake up the next day because yeah. you have seen some really compelling marketing campaign and
yeah.
become a, you know, Collingwood supporter. That just will never happen.
There is
happen.
No bandwagon jumping in Australia.
There is no bandwagon jumping. That's right.
It's not quite like the American or the North American sports that we're used to, where people are all over the place
yes.
and jumping around. Australians have that at their core. They sometimes are born into it, I think, aren't they?
That's exactly right. It is religion. They're born into it.
Very much.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. I think touching on the piece about communities, and, you know, we talked a little bit about your passion behind building data communities mm-hmm. and democratizing data. I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
Absolutely. I think there is sometimes a perception that data and analytics teams within an organization should be the experts of data. My view is the complete opposite.
Yeah, wow.
We are enablers of the business and all teams that work within the AFL, and we are doing our job if we can enable them to be doing their job with the tools of data and analytics.
Amazing.
The saying or the motto that I always like to use is, we teach them how to fish. We do not fish for them.
Amazing.
And
sometimes easier said than done.
Easier said than
yeah.
done.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But really, that's how we scale our impact. If my small team were the only experts of data within an organization, there's only so much impact we can make. But if we can make everyone an expert, then our impact just scales.
Amazing. How do you do that? What are some of the modalities? What are the things that you are, and not just in the AFL, because I think this has been something that's been quite a passion for
yes.
you wherever you've gone. So how do you do that? What are the modalities? What's the process? How do you get people on board? How do you empower them?
Absolutely. I mean, I think step one is you need to have that data foundation in place that can scale. By that, I mean a real big focus on automation and also the ability for your data platform and tool set to be self-service. Once you have that in place, when I think about my team of 12, they spend an equal amount of time doing the development and the building as they do in training, upskilling, and also fostering a data community.
Amazing. And would that be then with very specific impetus on people sort of plugged throughout the business as let's say an SME or a data owner or a data steward or whatever, however you identify. But is that sort of a very structured approach for you guys?
We work within our business domain. So, you know, how we work with clubs, how we work with the teams responsible for growing grassroots community football, you know, the football performance or the game analysis teams. Each of those teams we respect have their own culture and their own way of wanting to learn. So we really respect that. But at the highest level, what we do is we provide training sessions. So they can be for a lot of people, for a small group of people, or even one-on-one training.
Amazing.
How we supplement that is really fostering the data community.
Yeah.
All our users, and we approximate our kind of users based on how many Tableau users or how many users are on our reporting platform.
Of course, that makes sense.
It's around 850 at this point across AFL industry. So all of those users we would foster within a data community. And that just lives within Microsoft Teams. It could honestly live anywhere.
Amazing.
And the idea there is that anyone can ask a question, start a discussion, and we'll facilitate it. But really, other people will just jump in. And Amazing. One club will answer the question of another club. So just that community aspect so that they are teaching each other within that community, again, allows us to scale. So we're not always the ones having to facilitate that.
That's incredible, especially given the nature of the political or I suppose the competitive landscape, that one club will be answering the other club's questions and sort of it's that community. And you've clearly worked hard to develop a set of values and a set of sort of shared outcomes. And to your point, if you're lifting the visibility and the fan engagement of the AFL, regardless of whether they're Essendon or Collingwood, it doesn't matter, right?
That's exactly right.
You've got that whole visibility. That's really, really cool. Not an easy feat. Was it like that when you started, or is that something that you've had to really work on?
Really had to work on.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen overnight. We've been working on building this community for the past 3 years. Would we like to see more engagement? Absolutely. But we respect that people are busy.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have time to just sit around and post in a data community.
Yeah. Oh, another workshop. Yes, I will attend. Thanks.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, our latest kind of iteration that we've kind of launched out to the 18 clubs is we have monthly showcases.
Amazing.
So each club showcases whether it's a new dashboard that they've built or a new tool that they've built for their business. Mm-hmm. Each club will showcase per month, and we've just kind of assigned all clubs by month. And that is just a great way to share best practice among the clubs. I think the latest post, if I remember correctly, was from the Gold Coast Suns. And their objective, obviously being in Queensland in that market, is how do they grow their fan base?
Yeah, of course.
So it was just this incredible, incredibly visual dashboard of how to visualize their existing fans and the opportunities to grow new fans. So heartwarming to see the other clubs kind of jump in and just really commend the work and ask questions. And
that's amazing.
Really amazing.
That's really amazing. And it does, again, speak to the commerciality of sport. What I think a lot of fans forget, or a lot of people who are outside that world forget, you know, we think, oh, entertainment, fantastic. Mm. But actually, it does have such a commercial lens. So from where you sit, when you came into the world of AFL, we talk about unlocking different sort of things, whether it be unlocking innovation, unlocking future potential, unlocking culture, which clearly you've done. But what did you come in and sort of think to yourself, okay, well, I'm going to unlock this to deliver some quick wins and some return on investment? You've been in consulting land before. You probably went in with that lens. Can you talk to me about that process?
So I've always encouraged my team, whether we're embarking on a new project or working with a new business domain, is how do we unlock quick wins as quickly as possible? And I know that sounds very obvious. Sometimes when you work in data teams and you start working on a project, you just kind of get into this rabbit hole. It's very easy to lose the big picture about why we're doing this. What's the so what of this? What I encourage my team to do is, even if it is initially a manual hacked solution, let's get something in front of the business as quickly as possible so we can prove value. The desire for my team is, you know, how do we build proper data pipelines? How do we automate? How do we build a beautiful dashboard than just have a perfectly finished product. In the world of sport, where, you know, it's our businesses, we put on an incredible events week on week on week, and we need to move with that pace.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's normally what we do, is we just hack together a solution that we think is going to answer, you know, 80% of what the business is asking. And if they find value in that, then we'll go back and actually build the proper data solution.
I love that. I think building an MVP really is what that
Absolutely.
Is, right? And kind of going and throwing it on the wall or at the wall and going, okay, well, what works here? What doesn't? And also, does this make sense? I mean, it makes sense to us as data people, and it's a really great iterative process. So awesome.
That's right.
Switching gears a little bit and talking a little bit more to the leadership side, and this isn't just AFL, this is sort of Alisa as a human, you know, from your history of leading teams, whether it be, you know, at Meijer and doing more of a marketing, which of course speaks to what you're currently doing. It's customer focused, it's customer journey. What are some of the things that you sort of hold as your North Stars of leadership and what guides you?
I mean, I think any people leader will say that you do evolve over time, and really your experiences shape kind of how you end up being as a people leader. And when I reflect back at all the different roles that I've had, you know, given the unique set of circumstances for that business during that period of time with those people that you had on hand, you need to flex and figure out what's the right leadership style that's going to work for that team.
Definitely.
Currently in my AFL role, when I started, I think I had a team of, I don't know, maybe it was five. Data and analytics wasn't really people didn't really understand what it was. So as I built my team to what it is today, it was really important for me to bring in people that did not necessarily grow up with footy.
Yeah.
And people are surprised by that.
Yeah.
But I think sport is an industry that attracts a lot of people. A lot of people want to work in sport. But I think especially within the world of data in sport, it was important for me, like myself, in my own experience, to bring in best practice and expertise from other areas. And so as much as possible, I try to hire people that can bring a different perspective. And that's actually difficult, because when I post a role for my team
just thinking that.
In the AFL,
of course,
we get so many candidates, which I'm so thankful for and appreciative for, that AFL has that brand and that attraction for candidates.
Absolutely.
And normally the first thing that I will see on a cover or a cover letter resume will just be like, I have loved AFL my entire life. Yeah. Like, this is my passion. And look,
Dream job.
And I do not discount that. And I absolutely value that. And I will hire people like that on my team. But again, for me, as I was building it, it was about unique perspectives, different perspectives, and people who are not afraid to just ask questions. And that was for me from day one. I did not grow up with footy. I still do not fully understand the game, but I'm okay with asking incredibly silly questions, because I know that if I have that question, there's someone else in the room that has a question.
I love it. Do you know what? And I think speaking to that diversity of thought, right? The whole premise around that is to seek people who don't have these filters that are just the assumptions that you'd walk into a room with, ask questions, turn things upside down. Sometimes probably you don't even realize you're turning things upside down and asking those questions. And I think it does add such color to it. Going one step further and talking about diversity, I know that you do a bit of support for some women in data events. You're on a couple of different committees around data and supporting diversity. How do you approach that? You're in a very male-dominated industry. How does that go for you? And how do you navigate that world?
Ultimately, working in data and working in different industries, unfortunately, women normally are the minority in many teams and roles. And I guess how my thinking has evolved, you know, I know there is an incredible focus on, you know, first gender diversity, and which is incredibly important. And there's also, you know, a multicultural lens as well, and how to bring in different backgrounds. But for me, to simplify it, if I think about bringing in diversity of thought and unique perspectives, it almost solves for itself.
I love that.
And so I look at kind of the makeup of my team with that philosophy in mind. And it's just now happens that the majority of my team are women, actually. Men are the minority.
Wow. Says very few leaders in the data and analytics space.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's incredible. And obviously you focused in on diversity of thought prior to gender, ethnic, whatever else it might be.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
I've worked with a neurodiversity social enterprise as well. So just a broader lens on diversity. The company is named Audicon. I definitely want to give them a shout out. They help companies bring in neurodiverse talent.
Fantastic.
So we've worked with them and we have an analyst on my team from Audicon. And he has been incredible because he just approaches problems and thinks about problems in a different way.
Unbelievable.
And what he is passionate about, what I've seen he is passionate about, is how to automate manual processes.
Unreal. Everyone needs one of those people. That is incredible. I mean, there are so many superpowers inherent in neurodiversity and
absolutely
that entire spectrum. And I could go very deep on this one, but I love that you've done that. And great to shout that company out. What are they called again?
They're called Audicon.
Audicon.
Yes.
Amazing. It's definitely for our listeners. Have a link into that.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, taking that now perfectly segued into automation and where we're headed and what the future looks like. From a sporting perspective, you would need to think about automation and really getting honed in on how to make the most of your people in that hub and spoke model to service all of the 18 clubs. Then there's the next step, which goes into that AI ML sort of space. What does that look like for you guys? And for you, in terms of where you sit, where's your head at? And I'm conscious that it's very much a conversation right now. There's not a lot of people taking a huge leap, but just surveying the land. What does it look like for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's such an exciting time because I feel like the broader world of data is finally having its true day in the sun.
It really is. The golden children, finally.
Finally. Everyone is talking about AI, and people who you'd never think would be talking about AI is talking about AI. So I'm incredibly excited about what it could potentially unlock for the AFL and for the broader sports industry. But at the same time, I don't think anyone has quite figured out exactly how it's going to play out. Yeah. I think there is now recognition that potential use cases may not actually make sense because AI is incredibly expensive to run.
Mm-hmm. Funny that, isn't
yes.
it? All these wonderful ideas and, oh, how much is that going to cost us?
Exactly. So I think yeah. the cost component is one thing, but another component that I think is now starting to make its way through is that you cannot have an AI strategy if you don't have a data strategy.
Oh, preach, Elisa. Preach. Yes, exactly.
And if you, first of all, don't have all your data centralized, curated, quality checked, you cannot have an AI strategy.
And again, we've got listeners who are just coming into the industry all the way through to C-level, and there's very different questions that are probably going off in those two ends of the spectrum. Why? Why, just from a simplistic perspective, in your perspective, not just AFL, but anywhere, do you think having that sort of house in order strategy is important first?
I mean, simply put, it's just garbage in, garbage out.
Yep. Brilliant. when you start getting code writing code, you have a problem if that initial code isn't clean and safe.
And even underneath the code, it's the data underneath the code, if it's not in order, then you know, what does it all mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm thrilled that I feel like we're at a place where we do have that data foundation in place so we can actually start to build on top of it. And what those AI use cases are going to be, absolutely, we don't have that fully figured out yet. But I would say there are probably two areas within my team and how we service the AFL industry that I'm excited about. On one end is how we can drive further adoption of data and analytics leveraging AI. And what I mean by that is, you know, if we have moved from a world of people accessing data through manual spreadsheets, now it's through, you know, automated dashboards. I feel that the next iteration of that is just through natural language. The AFL exec want to understand what were the past 10 games in Sydney that had the highest attendances when they played Collingwood. That absolutely through a dashboard. If you just filter straight through, you can eventually get to that answer. But some people just want to be able to through natural language, ask that question and get that answer out immediately. So I'm really excited about AI's use in driving adoption of insights. And on the other side of the spectrum, how I can support the engineers on my team through code assist and quality checking and all of that.
It is a big time saver. And obviously thinking about one person and what they're capable of and magnifying that 10 times, right? What is the highest value use of that person's time? And can they be supercharged? I think there's so much conversation about humans are going to all lose their jobs and we're going to be, you know, ruled by the machines and all of these amazing, you know, stories of what could potentially happen to the human race. What's your take on that? What do you think the jobs of tomorrow look like? What does this data and analytics space look like? And what perhaps are some of the more important skills to start fostering and adopting now?
So I'm definitely an AI optimist. I do not think AI is going to take over all our jobs. If I had a crystal ball and I could fast forward how humans, data teams, are taking advantage of AI, it's, you know, how do we make ourselves more productive in our jobs and in our daily lives? That's it. I do hope that it can make us more productive and also scale our impact.
I think that is probably one of the more optimistic answers. And it's the one I tend to go towards as well. People are constantly asking, have I chosen the right domain? Is my role going to be completely codified? Am I just going to become this human that sort of is pointless on the other side of the computer? And it's kind of now elevating the conversation to, well, what can we do as more human-oriented efficiencies? So do we want to engage more in our EQ skills? Do we want to ask more critical thinking questions? Do we want to be able to communicate more effectively to solve problems? You know, these are things I think as humans
absolutely
are going to come back as the most important. Switching gears slightly, talking a little bit about your career history and trajectory, people will probably look at your profile and go, wow, what a cool job, dream job for so many people, right? Such an iconic brand, such an incredible organization. No doubt you got there through quite a lot of grit and graft and hard yards and lessons learned. So I'd love to talk a little bit about, you know, in your life, reflecting back, what are some of those key pivotal moments that either shaped your thinking or you had a really hard knock and you had to learn from? That's a really valuable thing for people to hear, knowing that it wasn't all rainbows and butterflies from here to the AFL.
Yeah, I would probably say two things. I'm sure there's a lot that goes into that very big, deep question. But if I just go off what my gut is telling me, there are probably two things that I think have lent its way to how I've been able to navigate my career. The first is just the power of hard work and just putting in the time, the effort, the hours. Definitely that is something that my parents instilled in me and my sister. They immigrated from South Korea to the U.S. in the 1970s. I've heard many versions of the story from them, but along the lines of, you know, we had $100 in our pocket. We didn't know any English and we just took the flight over and just started our lives from scratch. And they were able to build an incredibly successful company through the years and, you know, really focused all that money they made into educating my sister and myself. So that power of just hard work and resilience, I would say is number one for me. The second is just the power of curiosity. Generally speaking, I would say I am an introvert. So if you put me in a meeting with a ton of people, I will not be the one commanding that meeting and, you know, leading that meeting necessarily. I will always be the one asking the questions. For me, that has, I think, really been my superpower in that I'm able to really understand what's going on in the room, what's being discussed, but ask questions that I think are going to move the conversation forward or move the conversation in a slightly different way. So just the power of curiosity. I know when I speak at a lot of events, they have a similar profile to myself. They may be introverted and normally the feedback they'll get was, you just need to be more assertive and aggressive. That's just what you need to do. I challenge that because I think there are other ways to exert influence depending on kind of what your style is.
I love it. I appreciate your authenticity with that because it's true. And I think there's a lot of being in a male-dominated industry, we come up quite often against more traditional male-dominated traits in terms of leadership and, you know, the assertiveness and the powerfulness and the very verbose. And I have often questioned, is my way of leadership, which is softer, more intuitive, more curious, more driven by, you know, understanding the scenario, is that enough? And by the sounds of it, you do think it is.
Absolutely. I mean, there is opportunity for anyone and everyone to always improve and iterate their approach. But for me, that is one thing that I will always stay true to. I won't necessarily change my approach to be louder and more aggressive just because that's what people think is the right way. I think there are many different ways to approach it.
That in itself is incredibly powerful. And I think there's probably a lot of people in your teams and teams that are sub teams to that look to you and go, She did it. She's like me, and she did it. She did it through grift and graft and the hard work and the resilience and believing in her style, asking the right questions and being curious. That unlocks more than any loud voice in a room any day of the week.
Absolutely.
And so it's so powerful that you can lean into that. And you're conscious and aware of that with, you know, clear purpose, which is amazing. And I think that sort of takes me into the next bit around talking about asking questions and innovating. You know, I think the innovation curve has obviously dramatically risen, where we're now all thinking, what is possible? In terms of when, you know, you're busy, your time is back to back to back to back. How do you set aside time to innovate? Or is it something you do specifically? Is it a leadership-oriented focus group? How do you purposefully innovate?
If I were to phrase that in a different way, for me to continue to invest time and make time to learn new things.
Amazing.
And for me, it's taking myself outside of the world of sport.
Funny that.
Yes.
Isn't it funny?
Yeah. Look, there is so much that I am still learning about the world of sport and what drives this industry, but how I learn and think about innovation is, what are other industries, other companies doing to innovate that could have applications in sport? So when I think about the different things that I do to always ensure that I'm learning and upskilling, I love listening to podcasts. So, you know, to and from work, I have about 30 minutes each way. That's my podcast time, whether it's catching up on world news. I love following kind of the world of tech and all the drama that's happening in and around big tech. So podcasts is really important for me, and also volunteering my time. So I've always carved out time to volunteer in different nonprofits, and most recently decided to join the board of a nonprofit. And that whole experience about how to be on a board of a nonprofit and think about governance versus actual being an executive within a company, it's incredibly different. And I've learned so much about what that difference is, because being on a board, you actually want to go in and actually try to help them fix, but that's not the purpose or the role of a board member. Being in that whole world has allowed me to learn so much. And my fellow board members are from all different types of industries. So it's just been incredible.
And how, what you've learned in that not-for-profit, have you now pulled across and applied to everyday life in AFL? What does that look like?
Yes. So it's still fairly new. I mean, I only joined this board a few months ago. If I just talk a little bit about the nonprofit, it's called Spectrum. Their mission is how to build a more inclusive Australia.
I love that you're doing so much around this neurodiverse piece. I think
yes,
that's incredible.
Absolutely. Mm. So they focus around how to assimilate and bring in refugees to Australia, but kind of through the whole life cycle of families, multicultural families that move to Australia, all the way up to aged care. So how do you service within an aged care environment, multicultural communities and families, because they have very special, unique needs. And for me, actually, I've learned so much about the aged care industry, which when you think about it, could not be any further from the world of sport.
I mean, there's parallels here, though. I'm starting to see some fan stuff. I don't know. But I can imagine.
Yes.
Must be feeling like two different worlds.
Totally two different worlds. But what I've really appreciated about learning about the aged care industry is how much focus they put on industry trends and how that's going to be impacted by future demographics of Australia. This country is aging, and there is absolutely going to be a short supply of people who work in the aged care industry to support everyone. Within sport, it is a very here and now industry at times, right? Because when you think about, we just put on a massive, massive games week on week on week. Absolutely. It is very operational at times. But I think important, what I've learned is, what is our industry going to look like in 10, 15, 20 years? What are the demographics of Australia going to be like in 10, 15, 20 years? That has been eye-opening for me.
That's fascinating. And it's not something that, unless you are exposed to that domain, particularly the aged care, it's not really front and center.
No.
You know, so I've said this on this podcast before, and it's probably being a bit redundant, but in Australia, there's, and you'll get this viscerally having come from the States and me from Canada. When you come here, everyone sort of sits back and goes, she'll be right. It's all good. Everything's fine. And it's kind of like, Yeah, no, she might not actually be okay. And, you know, we are looking at the kind of cliff edge of the baby boomers exiting into retirement.
Absolutely.
To your point, we're going to have this massive skills gap and we're looking around going, oh, how did that happen? Sorry, what? And it's kind of like, okay, cool. So the fact that you're thinking about this and you're thinking into the future, you're thinking about who your viewers will be and how that, you know, messaging and marketing and engagement and the technology, you've got this huge cohort of heavily enabled fans in terms of technology coming through.
Yes.
How do you talk to them? How do you speak to them? And I can imagine that's probably put a very, very different lens on everything you do at the moment.
Absolutely. At the AFL, we actually do a really good job about thinking about future demographics and the changing face of our fans. But it's always a push and pull is, you know, how do we focus on the now to make the now incredibly good? Because it's a trade-off if we're going to have to invest in the future. So
yes.
Look, it's something that every business needs to deal with. Where we are right now, I think we are at a bit of a tipping point in terms of the changing of generations and incredibly different generations in terms of what we look like.
Totally.
And what that's going to mean.
Yeah. It's fascinating. It's an amazing time to be in the world of data and analytics.
Yes.
That's for sure. And I do think, you know, it's a great kind of segue to sort of wrap up what looking at the future. And the final question I like to ask, we've literally traversed everything from, you know, the data and analytics world of sport to gender diversity and neurodiversity to leadership and innovation to all of these incredible topics. I want to focus back in on you for a second and think about the next 12 months. The kind of closing thought that I like to leave everyone with is, from your perspective, what is your one word? What is your sort of North Star word that you could place on this year as you look into the next 12 months into the future? So that traverses, you know, sort of the end of this financial year and into next. What is it for you? Yeah, I'm really dropping the existential question in the end.
I mean, I guess I'm thinking broadly, so not just within my professional life, but within my personal life as well. I'm just going to go with what my gut is telling me right now, and it's going to be balance. I know when, you know, it's time to shut down, it's time to shut down. And if I don't have to be working late nights, I will never work late nights. So I feel like I've always been good about work-life balance, but I think it's broader than that for me. I think balance in terms of how I can be across different domains. And I think what it all kind of bubbles up to is how I can continue to learn my work life, my personal life, the time I'm putting with this nonprofit. But it's also about how I can physically, from a wellness perspective, also kind of up the ante as well. So just balance in terms of wanting to learn ultimately how to just be a better person. Professionally, personally, physically.
I absolutely love that answer. And I think probably every human on this planet right now can relate to exactly that. I think doing that with purpose and with intention and with deliberate focus is probably something we all need more of. So it's an incredibly intuitive answer. And given I didn't prep you on that, I appreciate it. I think it's something we can all remember, right? Having that focus. What is it that we actually want? Mm. And then being able to implement it. So thank you. I think we can all take that and put it in our back pocket for the year. Elisa, it's been such a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for being open and transparent. And I'm so excited for what the future of not only the AFL, but all the 18 clubs has. I think with you at the helm, they are in for an absolutely incredible ride. Thank you for, you know, doing what you do for Australian sport. I know everyone listening will have been fascinated by that. So thank you for sharing.
Thanks so much for having me.
Amazing.
Thanks for listening to Mastering Data. Hit follow to get future episodes packed with valuable insights and tips for those looking to excel in the world of data. And if you enjoyed this episode, leave a review to help others find the podcast.